Now, a regular face on Countryfile, a program that is peaceful and tranquil, Steve Brown might not be the kind of person who would captain his country at the Olympics in one of the most intense, sometimes violent, and always full-on sports in wheelchair rugby, but Steve is a man of many sides. In this episode of the podcast, we get into how he found himself in a wheelchair, the drive to become an Olympian, and what is next for him. Enjoy episode 15 of Superpower State of Mind with me, Marlon Anderson. So, Steve, hearing your story up until this point, there's so many things that I want to ask you before we get on to that, the next part of your career where you present and with all the nature and the wildlife. And it's just like you're basically living every bit of what you wanted to do throughout everything you're telling me. And I know that when we as humans, we go through trauma, it changes us completely. And it's crazy because when my mum passed away 5 years ago, I changed massively my whole attitude to life, my personality. Things that were once relevant to me were no longer relevant in my life. And I just saw things with a different lens almost, right? And I cared for my mum until she died. And this was post Love Island. So I went from being in the limelight to just taking a step back and wanting to just humble myself. So I actually became a carer for a really sweet guy that had spinal cord injury. And he wasn't able to move at all. And he was in a motorbike accident. And so I was his full-time carer. And oh my God, I only did it for 4 months. And it gave me an insight to life I'd never seen before. And it made me appreciate so much about life and different things and the smallest things as to making myself a cup of tea and him having to ask me to make it for him. Me having to clean his eyes or itch his eyes if he had an itch. And it just made me see, honestly, life so differently. So hearing about you talk about, you know, when you were younger and your attitude was a little bit different towards sports and, you know, you saying you'd pack half your kit, etc. And then you started to travel. And it's weird because I used to be cabin crew too. And I just saw culture and I lived in Dubai for a few years and I traveled the world. And even that opened my eyes to different ways of living and different countries and different cultures. And it was beautiful, right? And all these life experiences you take each time and you just witness things very differently. And when you said, you know, you moved abroad and you became an area manager, did you feel like you were completely happy at that point in your life before you had the accident? Or did you feel like you still wanted to achieve more different aspects of your career?
When I was working as an area manager, I certainly was very happy in the moment. I had done well in terms of my career path and trajectory. I was one of the, or maybe even the youngest area manager, and the others had all come from different backgrounds, like a Tesco's area manager or something similar like that. And but coming up and going through the ranks, you know, from cleaning the accommodation, I felt very achieved and was very happy with myself and the way that I had become a young man. And I was certainly enjoying my lifestyle over there, but I wasn't really thinking at that point beyond that. I was living for the moment. I was enjoying the work that I was doing. I was enjoying the challenges that I faced. I loved the people that I was surrounded with. And I was blessed to be working in some really, really pretty and nice places. But in terms of my happiness, I was certainly happy in the moment and I was certainly enjoying myself whilst I was doing it. But at the back of my mind, I also know that I was thinking, well, I can't do this forever. I can't live this lifestyle in terms of the other things that I wanted from life. You know, to settle down, get a house, get married, children, you know, the life goals that a lot of people have. And they were certainly goals that I had outside of career and outside of work. But what I did know is that whilst I was doing the area manager work and being abroad, I was gaining skills and knowledge to put myself in a better situation in the future to be able to find a job when I was looking to come back home and settle down and all of that kind of thing. So I was certainly enjoying what I was doing. I knew it wouldn't last forever.
So when it came to that day and you were on that balcony and when you fell off and you were on the floor, what was the first thing that came into your mind, Steve? Like, did you understand what was happening or were you in complete shock?
Neither is the real truth for that. When I fell, as I tripped, what happened is on the floor, you have the threshold between indoors and outdoors, where the sliding doors are, and it was just a little tiny step. And as I was carrying the plates, I caught my foot on the step. Now, in any other situation, you have that little stumble when you get your balance back. Now, I just didn't have the room to take those couple of steps. It's sort of with one step balcony as opposed to a couple of steps and balance. And so I was very much leaning forwards as I was tumbling. And so my balance and my weight was head heavy. So it sent me over. And as I went, I sort of threw the plates to the side and I actually grabbed the rail and tried to hold on to that. But that was wet and so my hand slipped and it sent me into a little bit of a spin, which is how I ended up on my bum and my head backwards. Instantly landing, I knew that I had done something serious. At the time, the person that I was with was actually looking over the balcony shouting down to me like, "You okay? Are you okay?" And they were crying and upset, and I was spending my time more on trying to calm them down. Like I say, I was completely conscious, just instant numbness. Nothing would move, nothing would react. And what I was doing by saying, "I've just winded myself, I'll be up in a second," I knew I wasn't gonna get up. I knew I wasn't gonna get up, it was obvious I wasn't gonna get up. But I was just buying myself some time at the same time as trying to calm them down. I didn't want them shouting and screaming and worrying. And so by saying I've winded myself meant that I could buy myself just a minute just to lay there, get my thoughts together, and at the same time try and calm them down a little. And when the ambulance crew turned up and all that kind of thing, there was a little bit of confusion. But it wasn't in the sense of I'm confused why I can't move. I've seen enough accident and recovery programs and you know, people fall in where the first thing they do is put a neck brace on and all that kind of stuff. I knew what had potentially happened. So it wasn't a confusion about that. It was more just right there and then being in the moment, nothing else. When you're doing anything, you're thinking backwards and forwards about what's going to happen tomorrow or what was going on yesterday. Every conversation you have is in the past, present, or like future context. You know, you're always thinking backwards and forwards through time. But in that moment, I was completely in the moment. I wasn't thinking about anything else that was going on in my life. Or any other stage, what's going to happen in 5 minutes, what happened 5 minutes ago. There was no questions like, how did that happen? What's going to happen next? I was just completely in the moment and focusing on what was going on around me.
At the point they told you, you know, that your life would be changed and that you'd be using a wheelchair, do you think that it sunk in properly?
No, I mean, you know, you always have that thing at the back of your mind. When they told me, it wasn't until I was at Stoke Mandeville when they explained to me about my injury. They explained about how my spinal cord had been severed. They explained to me why I couldn't move my hands properly and why I couldn't feel anything from my chest down. And they were very honest with me. The thing is that you have it in the back of your mind. Yeah, I know you know what you're talking about, but I'll be the exception. I'll be the one that walks again. I'll be the one that... And for a long time, you hold on to that little bit of belief. or deny, or being in denial, whichever it is. So I have a belief that it will be okay, or denial about how bad it is. And I don't know which I was in. But I can remember the day when it properly sunk in. I was in the gym where they would help us with learning how to go through. You know, this wasn't a gym as in terms of weightlifting. This was a gym in terms of learning how to get in and out your chair, how to learn to keep your balance, how to get up off the floor without being able to stand, and that kind of thing. And it was in there when they was measuring me up for my first wheelchair. Up until then, I'd been using and borrowing hospital ones. But then you have to get one measured to you, you know, a tailored fitting wheelchair so you can get the best out of it. And it was there at the top of the form when it said Steve Brown, non-walker. And it was there in black and white, you know, that this was my wheelchair and it was being made because I couldn't walk anymore. And I burst into tears. That was the first time I cried in hospital, or cried about my injury. And it was then when this moment of realization, when I read my name and next to it just said non-walker. And that was when I knew that this was real. And however much I thought, oh, it's all right, I'll be okay, I now knew that I wasn't.
Yeah. Do you think from that moment onwards, it was almost like a grieving process for you, like grieving the former Steve in a sense of being able-bodied, in a sense of being able to move, etc.? And then you said you kind of went on this journey of depression, in a sense, and your family were thinking of ideas to help you. Explain that period of your life where you said you felt low.
Well, you know, when you talk about depression and that kind of thing, I don't know if it was depression in that sense. You know, there's certainly, I've met people and worked with people and know people that have been in bad places mentally, that have without doubt had depression. Now, whether I was in a place where I was depressed, I certainly wasn't happy, but I don't know how, where you draw the line on being unhappy and depressed, if you see what I mean. Yeah. But in terms of my outlook, of course I was nervous, of course I was worried, and of course there was frustration. You know, now I've been to learn how to hold a knife and fork again, because my hands don't work. Yeah. You know, of course I wasn't in a good place, but I've always been a very practical person and I've always seen things as a challenge. Whether, you know, whatever it is, and that comes from my sporting background, always being sporty, always wanting to do well when it comes to physical challenges. And now being in a wheelchair and learning how to get dressed, learning how to hold a knife and fork, for me, these were all just new physical challenges.
And so that is, how did you keep your mind strong throughout learning all these new challenges? How did you keep your mind just positive and strong? Because
on a daily basis, it went up and down. In terms of my mentality, my mental health, my happiness, it was very much focused on the people around me. And it was about my family that came to see me every day without question. It was the nurses and the doctors that were doing everything they could to help me. I knew that I couldn't be in a better place or more supported in the situation I was in. And it was that sort of reassurance of, okay, well, I might not be able to do these things, but I'm surrounded by a team of people that, one, will either teach me how to do it, or two, that will support me with anything I can't do. And it was that where my mental strength came from. And it was quite funny. There was one day where I was learning to get dressed. And so I was sitting on the bed and I'm having somebody teach me how to put my trousers on without being able to stand up, and, you know, lifting my legs up and sliding them over my feet and all that kind of thing. And it was then where, you know, they the OT that I was with just said, Steve, you're a very practical person, aren't you? You know, you think things through and you think very logically about stuff. And that was me just thinking about how am I going to get my trousers on? So it was all about those, seeing everything at every stage as a challenge. I was scared, I was nervous, but you know, for some people starting a new job, that's a challenge. They'll be scared and nervous on their first day of doing that. So it's all about perception.
It's just so inspiring how you've used your mind to combat every battle and challenge that has come with your accident, and how you're viewing everything in a different light, and you've chosen not to go down a dark path, which I'm sure many have done, where they just feel like giving up in a sense, but you just wanted to carry on and you didn't let this accident define you as a person or where your career was heading.
Well, thank you, but you know, it wasn't me on my own. My injury certainly happened as much to my family and to my close friends as it did to me. Like I say, at every stage, even when I first went down to play wheelchair rugby, you know, that was so eye-opening for me. That was where my new sense of okay, well, these people seem pretty okay with it, maybe I can be okay with it. That was where I started learning, like I say, a few tricks of the trade about how to get through life in a wheelchair. I started learning a few little hacks about different things, or how you can get things done quicker or slightly different from how maybe you were shown in hospital from these people. And then to go 7 or 8 years later, and then the people that inspired me to be my best, to achieve as much as I could with my position, to then be their captain at the biggest competition of our generation, the home Paralympic Games, was phenomenal. To have their trust and their belief in me, and to have gone full circle like that, to lead them out on the biggest days of their lives, was something I never thought that I would do. And it was amazing to be trusted with that responsibility.
That is amazing. And obviously I know you're a big fan of the outdoors. You said nature and traveling has always been a part of you. And how did presenting Country Park like come across? How did you get into that?
Yeah, so for me, it was quite strange. So London 2012, we came fifth in the world, best in Europe. It doesn't sound too bad when you say it like that, does it? But it wasn't where we wanted to be. We wanted those medals. So the next games was over in Rio. And so it was another 4 years of training, to being told what to eat, when to eat it, how much of it to eat, when to go to the gym, what to wear at the gym, what to lift at the gym, how long to rest between lifting it, you know, everything. And so that was my focus. I was focusing on Rio and potentially getting a medal there. And it was actually on the build up to the competition that I got an injury on my thumb. It was during training and my thumb dislocated. And that injury meant that despite where I was within my career within wheelchair rugby and where I was as captain, etc., there was no way that I was going to recover from this injury in time to compete at Rio. And as a lot of people know, the sports circles and media circles moved together quite a lot. And it wasn't long before I was getting phone calls from the BBC and Channel 4 saying, look, we understand you've been injured and you're not going to be going to Rio to compete at, as the wheelchair rugby, part of the wheelchair rugby team. And I was like, no, I'm not. Thanks for rubbing it in. And they was saying, look, well, if you're not doing that, we've got opportunities for you if you'd like to take them. Would you come and be part of our team at the Paralympics and come and do some punditry and reporting and commentating and share your knowledge of sport with the rest of the world? And the BBC saying about, well, we've got the Invictus Games coming up and we need someone to teach Prince Harry and the soldiers how to play wheelchair rugby. Are you available? And all of a sudden, from playing this sport, I started getting opportunities through media, but to still be involved with it. And it was part of like the evolution of my next stage. And what I realise now is that I wasn't tasked and asked with being, I'd learned through the sport how to be on time. They knew that I could work under pressure. They knew that I could communicate well. They knew that I could lead. And so it was those skills that I learned through the sport that helped, you know, they're very transferable. They knew I'd be on time and prepared for Prince Harry. They knew that I would be reliable for live television and I could get my point across in time and that kind of thing. And it was from working in sport and the opportunities I had through that with doing Wimbledon and the marathon and other bits of sporting, commentary and TV, that they said, look, you know, you're pretty good at this talking malarkey. Have you got any other hobbies or interests? And it was then that I explained to the BBC about my fondness for wildlife, how my dad had instilled an understanding, the respect for it from a young age, how I couldn't get enough of David Attenborough and other wildlife shows and narrators. And now it was just such a big part of my life. And it was from there that I did a little taster session with Springwatch. They done a little video with me, me going down to my local nature reserve and looking at the birds of prey and talking about my love and my fondness for the area. And it was from there that Countryfile got in touch. We said that we've seen you do your bit on Springwatch. They vetted me a little bit more, asked me about how much I knew, about my relationship with the countryside, and then they took a punt on me and gave me a go on the show.
Wow.
And, you know, to go through school and be told that you're not going to be playing sport for your country and you're not going to be a wildlife presenter.
You've just gone and smashed it.
And I've done both.
Yeah. How does nature make you feel? Because it's really strange to hear somebody else talk about birds of prey like the way I do. I'm an avid bird watcher.
Yeah.
I go regularly. I live on a farm, so all I have around me is just nature. And when I'm outdoors, it just takes me to a different place and just settles my mind completely. And it's like a state of bliss in a sense, where it's so grounding. What does nature mean to you?
For me, there's a massive sense of nostalgia when I'm out and across the farms that I used to visit and frequent with my dad. And, you know, they've still got sheep in the fields where I used to help with the lambing. There's a massive sense of pride and looking back on my childhood with fond memories when I'm in those environments. But beyond that, it's taking a step back. You know, life's fast, life's hard, and you're continuously bombarded through different platforms with this energy where you've just got to keep up this expected pace of life all the time. But as soon as I'm out in the countryside, as soon as I'm out with, I take my nephews out bird watching and we've got binoculars and bird books in the car ready to go. And it's an escape. It's an escape from what people expect from you to have a moment of not having any expectations. This is just me, I'm out in the countryside, I'm doing what I enjoy. And almost being like a fly on the wall. I never want to interrupt what's going on around me. I just want to enjoy it for enjoyment's sake. And I love what nature can do for your mentality. I love what it can do for your stress levels and how you can use it just to feel a better person, a different person. Of course, when you couple that with having the respect of it as well, you know, thinking about the environment, thinking about the plastics you use, what you throw away, how you discard of things, and how you can have an instant impact on that world that you could have. It's such a privilege to enjoy. You can start feeling good about yourself as well, because now you're realizing that you're not just making decisions that can help you achieve and get through life, but also what can the decisions you can make to help support the beautiful world we live in. You know, education is part, is a massive part of anything. You know, if you don't know about it, How can you be respectful to it or understand it? And that's whether it's history, science, or nature. And I think that having the opportunity to learn about it as a kid has given me a little bit of an understanding. And as I've grown up, that understanding has turned into respect. And now I just enjoy being at one with it as much as possible.
Definitely. I completely relate with you there. And you said, obviously, it helps your mentality. It takes you away into like a different kind of world for that time that you're spending out in nature. Stephen, what else helps you with your mindset? Are there any specific things that you do day to day that help you? I mean, I meditate every morning. I try to anyway. But there's little things I put in place to keep my mental health strong. Is there anything that you do?
The truth is that from day to day, my life varies hugely. Every time, you know, I spend a lot of time away in hotels because of the different bits of presenting work that I do, and I'm up and down the country. One of the things that I try and do as much as possible is enjoy wherever I am. So I very often have the opportunity to be maybe working on nature reserves, or I'll be in the Yorkshire Dales or whatever it may be. And for me, part of my, I don't know, focus or way of enjoying myself and letting myself relax is to make some time, not just to make television whilst I'm there, but to enjoy it and get under the skin of it a little bit. I always try and find a little bit of time in the schedule or arrive a day early to enjoy what's going on there. And I always take my time to do a little bit of research about maybe what different birds of prey or different wildlife are in the area, and make sure that I know as much as I can about it before I go there and start talking about it. You know, making sure that I'm researched and I understand. And that in a way is a little bit of meditation for me, or just making sure that I feel confident to go and talk about this place. You know, I want to feel like I understand it before I start talking about it. And that in turn makes me feel much more confident in what I'm doing. And so then I'm less stressed about what I'm doing. You know, it's a cycle.
It also sounds to me that you have so much appreciation for what you do, and you try and see the beauty in everything that you do, especially with work. And to me, gratitude and appreciation is one of the biggest things that have helped me get out of a dark place. You know, when I wake up in the morning, I kind of focus on what positives I have going on in my life. And I just, when I'm out and about and doing different things for work, or I'm out in the nature, I try and be so present and mindful and take each moment in and just be grateful that I'm here and I get to experience it. And I think that's super important.
Yeah, for me, I mean, life's about experiences. Some of them are not always positive. You know, you can't always choose how your life is going to go. It's very often dictated to you, or certainly a lot of what goes on is shaped by the people around you. Terms of that, I just do what I can to surround myself with positive people. I do what I can to make sure that I'm surrounded by like-minded people, people that don't cause me any stress that I don't need, that don't cause me any added weight to life. You know, there's 11 billion people in the world. It's not that hard to find some that are on the same page as you.
Oh, 1,000,000%. So I'm going to ask you a question. What message would you give someone who is now at the same point as the start of your journey?
Well, you know, I do a lot of mentoring. I work with a lot of charities that are involved with spinal injuries. And also I do a lot of mentoring around young children in sporting environments, trying to help them focus and keep the right attitude to sport, stay humble and that kind of thing. And it's quite strange because they're so very different. On one side, especially with young athletes, I'm spending a lot of time trying to keep them grounded and making good decisions. And when I'm working with maybe people that have gone through injury or or struggling in life. I'm doing what I can to build them up and encourage them to make decisions and do as much as they can. And so it's quite different, but certainly down the route of mentoring and helping people that have had injuries. I think that a lot of it is not about necessarily telling people what they can do, you know, trying to tell them what they're capable of. But it's all just stepping stones, you know. I don't tell them what they could do in 5 years' time. I don't spend all my time saying it's not always going to be like this. Because at the time, believe you me, you're not worried about what's going to be happening in 5 years' time. You're worried about how you're going to get toothpaste on your toothbrush that morning. You're worried about how, when everyone says, right, let's go to the shops or let's go to the cinema, you're worried about having to ask somebody to you know, help you up a step, or you're worried about getting caught out in the rain and not being able to do anything about it. You know, these the little challenges, the little bits. Yeah. The first time I left the hospital and went down to watch wheelchair rugby, I had to ask somebody where the lift was to get upstairs. And the only reason I needed the lift was because of my wheelchair. The first question I had to ask anybody when I left hospital was to do with my injury. And I hated it, you know, like that person when they said, yeah, it's just round the corner, pal, you can't miss it. You know, it's so easy for them to answer, but so hard for me to ask and have to take the lift because I couldn't take the stairs. Or you'll get to somewhere where there's a couple of steps out the front, but you might need to ask somebody to help you in or ask somebody where the disabled access is, you know. And these sort of simple questions are very, very hard in early stages of needing that help and support. And so I try and break it down. I try and keep it small, and I try and keep it, you know, we talk about achievable goals and that kind of thing. And for some people, it might be just being able to get their socks on a little bit quicker than yesterday. You know, about finding ways of doing things without the same level of frustration or without the same level of embarrassment. To put yourself in a situation of someone that's gone through a life changing experience is very hard, even when you've also gone through a life-changing experience, because everyone relates to it differently. Everyone's got different goals. Everyone feels like, well, no, I'm not going to be able to achieve this, or I'm not going to be able to do that. And they might have very different priorities to what I had. And so there's always a level of empathy, but you need to understand, like anything else in life, who you're speaking to and what their goals are, not press them about what they're going to be able to do in the...
Honestly, just hearing you and your knowledge and your view on life just puts everything into perspective for me. And this is why I wanted to interview you, because I know so many people will learn a thing or two and just take so much inspiration from this chat. What do you feel like your future looks like, Steve? Do you want to settle down? Do you want to have a family? What's next for you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm in a good place mentally. I've had ups and downs, and there's still days where there's frustration or there's negativity creeps in. You know, not everything's always perfect, but overall, I feel quite achieved and quite settled and quite confident in myself. And I'm certainly in a relationship that I enjoy and I'm very happy in. And we're talking about children and the future and that kind of thing. My goals now are much more personal. It's not all about achieving in terms of sports or achieving in terms of career. But for me now, achievement's much closer to home, thinking about other people, thinking about my friends and family, starting my own family, hopefully, and that kind of thing. I've spent a lot of time as a sports person worrying about me. And I've spent an awful, you know, as being a sports person, it's quite a selfish lifestyle. You know, you've got to, it's all about what you're eating, where you need to be, what's going on. And you miss out on a lot of family stuff because of competitions or training abroad and that kind of thing. And so for me now, I'm feeling better and more settled in my career. And I suppose it's taking a bit of time now to spend more time with friends and family that have supported me for an awful long time through thick and thin, and also be thinking about a family of my own.
Well, let me tell you, you'd be an amazing dad. Gosh.
Well, let's hope so. But it's another challenge, isn't it? That's the way I try and look at life. And I try and do as best as I can at it. And my dad done a fantastic job with me and my brothers. My mum was an absolute rock and she's fantastic. If I could be half the dad that my dad was to me, I'd be happy with that.
Oh, Steve, thank you so much for coming to chat with me.
Thank you very much.
Steve, his drive, his passion, he really does possess a superpower state of mind. I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation. I want to say thank you so much for you all for listening to my podcast. It's now come to a close, and I've loved each and every one of the conversations I've had, and I've taken so much from the variety of people I've spoken to, and I hope you have too. Thank you for the messages and feedback on social media about what you've enjoyed. Please do follow me on Instagram as I have a new video series starting. You can find a link in the episode notes, and that is where I'll be posting about all the exciting projects I've coming up. Take care, and thanks once again for listening to Superpower State of Mind.